Today, I'm speaking with the team at the Nuclear Alternative Project, a nonprofit based in Puerto Rico that recently conducted a feasibility study funded by the U.S. Department of Energy for the deployment of small modular reactors and microreactors in Puerto Rico. Since we have a bit of a large group here, could each of you introduce yourselves, talk a little bit about your background and current roles, and the origins of the Nuclear Alternative Project?
Hi everyone, I'm Jess Aves Rivera. I'm the Community Engagement Officer with the Nuclear Alternative Project, and my background is in public health.
Hello, my name is Eddie Guerra. I'm one of the co-founders of the Nuclear Alternative Project, but my day job, I'm a civil engineer for the Nuclear Energy Institute, for nuclear energy. Specifically, I work for the firm ARUP.
Angel.
Yep. Hi, everybody. My name is Angel Reyes. I am a co-founder of the Nuclear Alternative Project, currently serving as the chief nuclear officer. And background, I'm a civil engineer, currently working in the nuclear industry as the senior reactor operator at the Calvert Cliffs Nuclear Power Plant.
And Jesus and Valerie.
My name is Jesus Nunes. I'm currently CTO of NAP. In my daily job, I work with Bechtel as a senior structural engineer. And thanks for the invitation.
Hi, I'm Valerie. I am the CEO of NAP. My day job is human resources, and I'm an entrepreneur. So with NAP, I just take care of the business in the back office, basically.
Great. So before I start about this feasibility report, I want to talk about the energy mix more broadly in Puerto Rico. So under the Puerto Rico Energy Public Policy Act, Puerto Rico's Electric Power Authority has to obtain 40% of its electricity from renewable resources by 2025, 60% by 2040, and 100% by 2050. What are the current and future prospects for Puerto Rico's energy mix, and how does nuclear fit in alongside renewables and other energy sources for electricity generation?
So I can take that question, Jezebel and the team, and then you can add to that. Puerto Rico has, it's important to note that Puerto Rico has been aspiring for a larger portion of renewables since the last 20 or 10 years. In fact, in early 2010, I understand, there was also a law promoting a specific RPS for Puerto Rico with similar ambitions. That was 2010. Still today at 2020, the renewable portfolio generation, it's roughly 2% of what was expected. So in terms of the RPS, that is a law that has been enacted that by 2025, the government should take from 2% currently to 40% of the electricity produced in Puerto Rico. And then in the next 30 years, that should be 100% renewables. And that's what the law states. I do want to add that in Puerto Rico, 2018, when NAP started engaging with the community and leadership in Puerto Rico, we brought the option and the alternative of nuclear energy, specifically small reactors. Although small reactors is not a new topic in Puerto Rico, it's been brought many, many times. This time was a bit different. This time was brought up, and the messenger and the champion were Puerto Rican engineers working in the nuclear industry. And that gave maybe, in my opinion, a different twist. And because of our dedication and sincere interest to present this option to Puerto Rico, the House of Representatives of Puerto Rico passed the first ever resolution to officially study the viability of advanced reactors. And essentially answer the question, do we really need this? Is it feasible? And that's what that resolution is exploring, how our feasibility study funded by DOE comes into play, because now it facilitates the conversation. We have produced the technical content to facilitate that question on whether it's feasible and necessary. So Emily, hopefully that brings some perspective to the question on the RPS and how our initiative builds up into that aspect.
Yeah, so it sounds like Puerto Rican leadership is willing to consider nuclear energy as part of the Puerto Rico's energy portfolio. But I'm curious, would nuclear somehow fit into these renewable portfolio standards? I know some people call nuclear energy renewables, although I'd say it's more accurate to call it clean. So would this willingness by Puerto Rican leadership to integrate, you know, small modular reactors into Puerto Rico's energy mix be viewed as, or would it be part of these, you know, clean energy standards that you're going for over the next 10 or 20 years?
Yeah, Emily, those are conversations that we're having now, because as you well know, different states here in the U.S., in mainland, they have a very different opinion and definition of what clean means, right? So those are conversations that we're having. In fact, Angel Reyes, he lives in Maryland, right? Angel in Maryland has a complete definition of clean, which it includes nuclear, my understanding. So those are conversations that I'm having, that we are having with the leadership in Puerto Rico. And I understand they will keep developing, will keep evolving, and hopefully we will see what happens.
Great. I would like to add to what Eddie is saying, and Eddie, maybe you can expand on this, that even though Puerto Rico does have this goal to go 100% renewable, one of the things that we are finding in our feasibility study is that it's just not possible to get there, and not without sacrificing other goals that Puerto Rico also have, one of them being reviving the manufacturing industry. And one of the things that our study is finding is that if people want to go to that 100% 100% renewable, it will leave behind energy-intensive industries out. So when we are talking about nuclear in this case, we're not talking to, fill the entire island with nuclear plants. It is very specific to this need of manufacturing so that Puerto Rico can continue to move along renewables, but without sacrificing these other industries that would need something more reliable. And that's our focus right here. Maybe Eddie, you know, I don't know if you had something to add here, exactly how we see this nuclear fit into this goal of moving into cleaner energies. And that's definitely something that, as Eddie said, we're in discussions on right now.
No, Jessa, you're exactly right. And one very interesting point about how Puerto Rico consumes electricity is that compared with the mainland US, the daily load profile, Puerto Rico doesn't have a duck curve. Puerto Rico doesn't have any variability at all on how it consumes electricity during the day and during the year. That's the beauty of Puerto Rico, that it's summer all year round, right? So that means that Puerto Rico runs on base load. And that means that when compared here to the US, where the load factor is around 60%, Puerto Rico is 75-80%, even higher for pharmaceuticals and energy intensive industries, as Jezebel said, where they need to have that reliable power source 24/7. And that's a good point that Jezebel brings, that Puerto Rico, the law states we're going 100% renewable, but then through our study, we are finding out that, well, but you want to build a strong manufacturing sector in the island, meaning energy intensive industries. So we are finding kind of different directions, but it's our job to just present the information and our findings.
That's fascinating. And I think I'd like to hear a bit more about the job creation aspect of nuclear energy as well. But first, since you mentioned this feasibility study, I'd just like to talk a bit more about that. So as I mentioned before, the Nuclear Alternative Project just completed a feasibility study that was sponsored by the DOE Office of Nuclear Energy and the Idaho National Lab. Could you describe a bit about how this feasibility study came about and what some of the key findings and recommendations are?
I can start, and it's a very comprehensive study. So I invite Valerie and Jesus and Helgesa to add. But to your first point on how it got started, since early 2019, NAP put together a team of experts and industry consultants, and we submitted an unsolicited proposal to DOE. DOE was interested in the proposal, and then at the end, middle of 2019, then they DOE accepted our proposal and said, let's move on with a preliminary feasibility study with the intention of addressing key critical questions before going into economics, before going into site-specific safety assessments. And that's the objective of this preliminary feasibility study, Emily, is address many questions that precede site-specific assessments from a development point of view. Many questions like, will the people accept this? What is the opinion of the people? But Puerto Rico has so much seismic activity. Does this even make sense? What about the waste issue? It's an island. How are we going to manage it? Puerto Rico's...
Is it legal?
Thank you, Valerie. The legal framework, the legal assessment, it was a full study on this. So those are many of the questions that we understood needed to be addressed first before embarking into more detailed studies. A couple of the key findings, and I will leave the others to fill me in here. But one of my favorite ones is that when we studied the grid in Puerto Rico, we thought that the grid was maybe not suitable for an advanced reactor. But the people from one of our partners, Pacific Northwest National Lab, they helped us to study the grid in Puerto Rico, even the new configuration for what is planned for microgrids. And we found that the new technologies, the new advanced reactors will have those technical capabilities to fit into a grid like Puerto Rico. And that to me is one of my favorite ones. I want to pass it maybe to Jessa first and share another key finding that she made. There were many, right, Jessa? But anyone that you think?
Sure. The other key finding, and it's one of the one that is really running with all our campaigns and everything that we're saying, is that there was the belief in Puerto Rico that people didn't want this and they were afraid of this and they didn't want to start a conversation about this. And that was just completely wrong. When we went out there with the community, we hired people from the community, and the only training that we did for them to go and do canvassing and talk to people was to tell them just about the project and what we were trying to study, and that was it. They themselves had the responsibility of looking for information about nuclear. And they were the ones also asking people about this. And we found that more than 90% are interested in continuing to study nuclear for Puerto Rico. And this aspect is very important, because we didn't ask people, do you want nuclear in Puerto Rico now? We know that the answer is no. We don't have to spend money on that. But we wanted to know, do you want to continue to explore, to understand nuclear and how we can benefit how we could benefit Puerto Rico? Because that's the status that we are right now. We're understanding it and see how we can fit Puerto Rico. And more than 90% of the people said, yes, I want to know more about this and how we can benefit Puerto Rico. And that really, it was a big surprise. We were expecting, maybe like a 60% or maybe 50-50. But that overwhelming number, it was a great finding here. We interviewed more than 3,000 people all over the island. We found that there was no difference between somebody that was educated, somebody that was not educated. We didn't find any difference between income either. So people really want to understand how nuclear could help Puerto Rico. And another thing that we found within all this interviewing was that people are not focused in any particular technology. They just want a solution for the energy crisis in Puerto Rico. So what they said actually was, I want to know what are all the options for me to solve this problem, for somebody to solve this problem. And they said, it's whatever it takes. Just keep me posted, do it well, be transparent, and don't screw us up. You know, that's basically what they said. So this is a great opportunity to really start a conversation with people and being very transparent with everything that we're finding, and bring people with us in all this process and exploring nuclear for Puerto Rico.
Yeah, that is really surprising. Obviously, because one of the biggest barriers to deployment of any nuclear technology in the US is public opinion. So it's surprising to hear that so many people are willing to continue the conversation around it. Why do you think that is? Why do you think there's this disparity between, you know, a willingness for communities in Puerto Rico to continue this conversation as opposed to, you know, some of the issues in the US more broadly around public opinion? What's your sense of that?
Well, number one is how we're talking about nuclear, right? Whatever you talk about nuclear is usually with the goal of convincing you that nuclear is the solution. Mm-hmm. But here the approach is completely different because we are having a discussion, right? We're having a discussion about what the problems are in Puerto Rico. We are listening to, you know, what is your struggle right now? And, people are saying, hey, I receive $600 a month and I have to pay $200 of electricity. I need something to really solve this. And then we start a discussion of like, well, we know about nuclear and it could bring this and this and this. I think, and technology has changed. So would you think that it would be an interesting, solution that we can look, explore and look into? And don't get me wrong, people don't say, oh yeah, sure, let's bring it here. It said, well, the people were saying it's something that we need to look into. We need to be careful with, who's gonna manage it. And we need to understand more about what are we gonna do with waste management, but it's worth looking at it. And that kind of conversation that is less, I think like it's less pressure in the conversation that they need to change their minds right away. It's more of let's start this conversation together. Let's explore it together. And that brings people more into, a more receptive mindset.
I think education is a big part of this. You asked about the disparity of people wanting it and people not wanting it. I think once they understand and we answer their questions, their mindsets change. This era of access to information with Netflix and the internet and you Google anything, people will get worried about things that happen or accidents, nuclear accidents that happen all over the world. But if you come to our team, they know this technicalities and they'll explain to you, this happened because of this, this and that, and this new technology solves that problem or addresses that issue to prevent it or now has safety features that, will alert us or prevent that from happening again. And Puerto Rico in our study doesn't have that problem, yada, yada, yada. So when you explain that, it soothes them and it calms them down because when you don't know, your first reaction is going to say, no, I don't want it. So education has been very key in us and Jezabel's team when they, she was in charge of this. That's why I said Jezabel's team, the canvassers, that what we did. We first told them this is, the training was basically this is what we want to do. This is what it could do. Would you be willing to learn more? And yes, obviously everyone wants to learn more once you answer the questions and you calm them down and you explain to them that's not what we're trying to do here.
Right. And before we move on to the next question, I just have to note that you are all volunteers, which I found incredibly impressive that you're going out and canvassing and doing community engagement, and this is all on the side of your full-time jobs. So with that, I'd like to talk a bit about the safety issues. You know, I think everyone knows about Hurricane Maria. It totally devastated the Puerto Rico's energy infrastructure among people's homes and lives. And it also inspired the need for a more resilient electricity grid. So could you talk a bit about the impact of Hurricane Maria on the urgency of the nuclear alternative project and what you would say to people who might be worried about adding nuclear power to an island prone to extreme tropical storms?
I would like to pass it maybe to Angel Reyes, who's on the line, or Jesus.
Jesus, are you on? Or yeah, okay. Basically, we understand that the first thing that I want to mention is that we know that it's not going to get any better. Yeah. You there, Jesus?
I'm here, but do you hear me?
Yep, I can hear you well.
Yeah, go ahead, Angel, and then Jesus can include.
Okay.
Yeah.
So, talking about all the weather-related issues there, as hurricanes, as you mentioned, we know it's not getting any better, right? We know that hurricane season is just a norm in Puerto Rico, and the safety concerns about the nuclear power plants and these new SMRs. So again, this is all ties back to the education in our feasibility study. So we focused on the design and on the new design technologies and new safety features, also made a comparison with the conventional nuclear designs, and definitely had to explain how safe are these plants and how reliable are going to be these new advanced reactors in the event of a hurricane, of an earthquake. So Eddie's team actually focused on the earthquake design and study for this new advanced technology. We also focus on all the operational and safety features of the advanced reactors, where we know for a fact, even with the conventional designs, that on their worst conditions, saying let's reference a hurricane condition, we know for operating experience here in the United States that a nuclear power plant can be 100% reliable and can maintain 100% power during hurricane conditions. So all of that needed to be captured in this study. All that needed to be shared with the community in Puerto Rico and with the leadership in the island, because this is something that needs to be known and shared across the community. So that was really important, and it's also a topic that it always comes up when we engage with the community, when we engage with the leadership in Puerto Rico. It's hurricanes, it's earthquakes now with the recent events in the island. So all of that was studied, was analyzed, and it will be more in more detail now in phase two, when we'll be focusing on site-specific feasibility studies on the areas that we've selected for locations of these reactors. And we're talking about small modular reactors, talking about micro reactors, and what would be the capability of an advanced technology sustaining a hurricane, the worst case scenario, such as Maria, which has been one of the greatest hurricanes that the island has faced in the past 100 years, similarly to an earthquake, one of the biggest earthquakes that we've had in the past 100 years, which we had recently in the island. So all of that is going to be analyzed, is going to be studied on phase two, on the site specific, and again, tied to our mission as an organization to share and educate and maintain the community engaged in this whole process is key, right? Because that way, once the results come out, we're going to be able to communicate and make sure that people understand that we are bringing in this these new designs with the capability of withstanding these type of events. So it is something that needs to be talked about. It is welcomed. The conversation, we're open to discuss, and we know that we want to focus on those are probably one of the key points there where we focus on is safety, right? People, their concern is that is what's going to happen and if you have an accident, what happens if there's a failure of any of your safety future equipment under a hurricane, under a earthquake. So all of that will be communicated and evaluated with the designs that we're going to be incorporating into the phase two of the study.
And I wanted to add to what Angel said and taking it back to Maria. When Maria happened, I was still not full into this project. And, you know, like I it was interesting, but I didn't think, you know, it was something for Puerto Rico. And I asked Eddie, oh my gosh, what would have happened if we would had a nuclear plant in the island right now? And I thought Eddie's answer was going to be around, well, we would have mitigated like this, or we would have responded like that. His answer was, well, we couldn't have energy right now. And again, we were not talking about conventional nuclear plants. We were talking about a micro reactor being connected to one of the hospitals. And that was when I said, well, people need to know about this. And we started working on it. And if anything, all these natural events has done to our project is that it has put people, it has put in people's mind what it's like to not have your basic needs, what it's like to not have energy. Why is having a reliable energy so important? On the other hand, it has also put people in their minds what the crisis looks like and how well the government is equipped to respond to an event like this. So on one end, it has increased our urgency in, you know, crazy levels on why we need to be looking at solutions right now that are feasible and that are accessible for everybody. But at the same time, it has made it more challenging for us to talk about nuclear when people having their minds the high risk that it is. So it is challenging. It is still interesting, and people. It's as Angel said, is definitely something that we need to continue to talk about.
Jesus, did you have something to add as well?
Do you guys hear me now? Or?
Yes, very well.
Okay, I have to turn off my video, but yeah, it's mainly what Jezebel said. We noticed the urgency when we saw Maria and we saw that the infrastructure in Puerto Rico is in a bad shape. And we saw our families and friends suffering, you know, from that, from months enduring without electricity and, you know, all the people that die because they cannot have electricity in the hospital. And we, you know, we got together and that pushed us to start the conversation of integrating nuclear power, especially SMRs and microreactors, into this Puerto Rico energy mix. And specifically, as I talked with Eddie and others in the group, in the critical infrastructure, because we know that solar and energy works for homes and very small base loads. But when you need some big energy source, that's where these SMRs and microreactors are needed. And I think that's our idea in this. Like, we're not telling people, hey, you have to get rid of solar, because we know that there is a solution. There are cases that will work and there are cases that it won't. So that's why we are presenting this idea. And also because I have background in structural engineering and specifically designing these nuclear plants, I know that we designed these for extreme events that will envelop all these events that happen in Puerto Rico. It's just a matter of bringing that down to the general public in terms of how you talk to them, because that's the real challenge, you know. It's just telling people, we know that the technology works, the design, the construction, but it's just, the challenge is just to tell them in their own words, hey, this is how this works. So.
Thank you. I think that's a really important message. So we're getting to the end of the interview here. So it would be great if we could just do a round robin of what each of you think are next steps for the Nuclear Alternative Project and the deployment of nuclear technology in Puerto Rico more broadly. Eddie, would you like to start?
Well, it's important to clarify that we have a plan set. We are all pushing for that plan. It's not that we each have a plan. As Jesus, as Angel said, our focus is to be straight with the community, bring this to the people. As you can see, Emily, you know, I'm an earthquake engineer for nuclear plants, and I've been doing this for 10 years. Angel is an operator. Jesus is a designer. We bring that passion. We bring that transparency to the people that we work on it. So we will follow that line. In terms of plans for what's next for us, we already have proposals in place for two main activities on our radar. Number one is the site suitability assessment. We already have partners aligned. We already have private industry sector representatives from Puerto Rico interested in this second phase, in this site suitability. We already have letters from the House of Representatives showing the support for second phase. So we're moving there because remember, Emily, with this first phase, we already scratched the surface. We answered many questions that were barriers for nuclear in the past. Now that we feel comfortable, now that we see an optimistic future for nuclear, we do want to go to specifics on which are the sites that could support this technology in Puerto Rico. That's number one. The second one is an educational campaign that we'll be working on in Puerto Rico, and NAP will be the leading voice on this. And we're going to continue just moving on the conversation and the dialogue with the community, with the leadership. Our formula is working. Professionals from Puerto Rico in the diaspora that had to leave the island, like Valerie, Jessa, and all, everyone, and that we want to just see Puerto Rico prosper. And our formula, our equation is working, and we will keep working on this.
Great. Well, it sounds like you're going to be very busy over the next few months and years. So I really appreciate you taking the time to speak with me. Thank you so much.
Thank you, Emily.
Thank you.
Thanks.